Welcome to Forward Thinking, a podcast from Foundation Source. I'm your host, Dori Krieger. Foundation Source is the nation's largest provider of comprehensive support services for private foundations, bringing unparalleled knowledge and expertise to over 1,200 clients across the country. The best ideas in philanthropy aren't always the tried and true. Trailblazing entrepreneurs and next-generation philanthropists are transforming the sector with inspiring ideas and innovative strategies. Join us as we explore the advice, experience, and insight of some of the creative minds shaping our collective future. My guest today is an actively engaged philanthropist, investor, and a pioneer in the world of interactive technologies. Jean Case's career in the private sector spanned nearly two decades before she and her husband, Steve Case, created the Case Foundation in 1997. Jean and her team focused the efforts of the foundation around many of the same entrepreneurial approaches she and Steve cultivated throughout their business careers. Jean was a senior executive at AOL and held strategic positions with GE's Information Services Division and at The Source, the nation's first online service. Her board service and honors are many and include Barron's 25 Best Givers, awarded in 2010, the same year she and her husband Steve signed the Giving Pledge. Today we'll discuss Jean's entrepreneurial style of philanthropy and the foundation's Be Fearless campaign. Jean, thank you for joining me in the studio.
Dori, it's great to be with you. Thank you for having me.
Acceptance and even celebration of failure has become much more commonplace in entrepreneurial circles and in the corporate sector. How has your perspective about failure changed throughout your career in business and philanthropy?
Well, you know, that's really an interesting question. As I think about my own life, and I think it's true of others, you know, life happens in chapters, right? Mm-hmm. So certainly I think back when I was young and just getting started, I think I was maybe a little paralyzed by fear at times, not wanting to look stupid, not wanting to make a big mistake just as I was getting going. But then mid-career, or mid-ladder, if you will, similarly, I was, you know, really had some success under my belt, felt good, et cetera. But there, where I often feared sort of making a big mistake, was I was looking to the next place I would go, that next promotion or that next role that I wanted. So fear could set in there as well. And then on the other side, when you really can look back and say, okay, I've had some successes in life, or certainly if there's a profile around you, that's a whole different kind of fear. So, you know, our work at the Case Foundation that has involved this Be Fearless campaign really reaches across sort of all chapters, all sectors, and recognizes that almost from any walk at any time in life, if you're not careful, you can be stopped by the things that you fear instead of seizing opportunities that might be in front of you.
Was there a particular moment when you realized that failure was actually something to embrace?
Sure. Although at the time, I'm not sure I would have called it failure.
Right.
And I think some of what we've seen change is almost the nomenclature around how we talk about these things. You know, in technology, of course, which is the career I spent my, you know, private sector time in, and of course, we've focused very much on technology at the Case Foundation as well. You know, the idea that you have to try a bunch of stuff, R&D, it's almost in DNA, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So going in, and even the idea of what used to be called beta testing, the whole idea was find everything that's wrong and see if you can fix it. So I think coming out of technology, there was almost more of a comfort and an expectation that the things you're going to build aren't going to be perfect and you are going to be making mistakes along the way. How do you learn from those, refine those, and ultimately produce something great? So I think in my own mind, there's no question that played a role in how I looked at what today is often called failure.
And speaking about the tech sector, I think we're hearing more and more about the so-called entrepreneurial philanthropy.
Yeah.
And particularly kind of the growth and style that's coming out of your fellow tech entrepreneurs in Silicon Valley. What are your thoughts on this style and how it's influencing philanthropy as a whole?
Sure. Well, again, the work that we've been engaged in at the Case Foundation has really been trying to work together in a collaborative to call the sector to try to be more innovative. I don't know anyone working in philanthropy that says, you know what, we've got it. It's perfect. We're having exactly the impact we set out to have. I think it's a journey, and we're all trying to become as good as we can be and have as much impact as we can. But at the same time, if you look at the results in many, many cases where billions of dollars through many, many decades have gone out, some cases, there's been no progress at all. And so this need for innovation, I think, is great and is shared widely across the sector. So I embrace this idea that the entrepreneurial spirit is becoming very much more alive in philanthropy. At the same time, I think, you know, we have to make sure, for instance, you know, Sean Parker's hacker philanthropy, for instance, I think we need to take everything that's great about a hacker mentality or an innovator's mentality and make sure at the same time that we're wise enough to know what we should be paying attention to, listening to, and learning from, and where we should be breaking the mold and trying new things. And sometimes I think in Silicon Valley, we see almost a brash arrogance that says, I know better, before they've really even understood what's gone forward. So I think the work in philanthropy has to be some combination of paying attention to what others have done and learning from those things, and then carving out new bold ideas, experiments you can try, risk-taking, etc.
That's good advice for people who are new to philanthropy and those who have been around the block for a while, too. Something to think about.
And I think that was my own personal journey. You know, when I came into philanthropy from the private sector, I felt like I was wearing someone else's clothes. I just didn't understand the space. There was so much for me to learn. And it really took me a few years before I realized that probably the same attributes that worked for me in business would be effective in philanthropy for me as well. But that really came after listening carefully to others, observing what others had tried, done right or done wrong, versus coming into the space, as some people are known to do, with the idea that I have all the answers, let me tell you how it should be done.
It was about 4 years ago, I believe, that the Case Foundation launched its Be Fearless campaign. And there's a quote on the website that really stuck with me. It's time to ignite a more fearless approach to change making, one that requires taking risks, being bold, and failing forward. What is the campaign about, and what do you hope to achieve with it?
Sure. Well, its genesis was our 15th anniversary at the Case Foundation, and we are coming up on our 20th, so you're right. It was just about 5 years ago. And the idea then was that we looked around, basically. We looked at our own work. We looked at the work of partners. We looked around the sector, and we discovered a lot of what you and I have already chatted about, and that is, you know, it wasn't a really bright picture in terms of where money and talent had gone and the impacts it had had. We saw way too many old daunting problems that didn't seem to be getting better. But there were bright spots. There were some transformational breakthrough areas where things had improved dramatically based on investments and talent chasing it. So we asked the question, how do we do more of that and make sure we don't do, you know, the other way, which doesn't lead to impact? So we basically hired a firm and we went to school on some of the causes, campaigns, movements that had had some extraordinary breakthrough. And out of that came a few principles that are present where we see transformation. When we looked at the principles and we studied them and the case studies under them, I think we stepped away and just said this can all be encapsulated really in Be Fearless.
It feels like a really bold call to action, actually, in my opinion.
You know, it starts with sort of make big bets. We say make big bets and make history. And we want to be careful here to say, look, anyone at any stage with any size organization in any role can make a big bet. We don't mean you have to make a global promise tomorrow to eradicate something necessarily. Everyone from where we sit can make a big bet, you know, in terms of where they want to go in the future and the impact they want to have. But it involves experimentation, trying new things, taking risks. And of course, if you're going to take risks because you're trying to really achieve something big and you're trying to innovate, you must embrace that failure is an option. And so the third principle is make failure matter. And there what we say is, look, in the effort of trying new things, you will, of course, find failure along the way. If it happens, don't let it paralyze you. Don't let it turn you around necessarily. See if you can learn from it. Fail fast, fail forward. Make sure you and others pick up the lessons from that failure, but keep going and persevere. And then the fourth principle is called reach beyond your bubble. And there it's really just a call to collaboration. Think about partnership and think about collaboration in ways you might not have before. The great movements that broke through have a tapestry of people who sort of didn't belong together under the tent, but that same odd tapestry, if you will, really played a key role in helping to break through. And so we encourage organizations to think about that.
I think we hear a lot about collaboration among funders, and I think collaboration is sometimes really hard to do. Can you share a story with us about how you've gotten together a group of people who normally have different points of view, and it's hard to get people around the table, but where the Case Foundation's been successful in doing that?
Sure. Well, you know, I had a really terrific experience very early in my career in the Case Foundation as we were just looking for the first time at providing some aid for HIV in sub-Saharan Africa. The PEPFAR, which is our big celebrated program that has had such a strong impact, was being considered but hadn't yet begun. And so the White House called together a very diverse table. And when I say diverse table, I mean they had everything from Planned Parenthood to the Catholic Church sitting at the same table and everything in between. People who had very different outlooks and perspectives on what the solutions might be. And we had faith-based leaders. We had private sector leaders. We had NGOs, you name it. We had pharma at the table as well. And I still believe to this day, without that really diverse table where you would at first have trouble to find common ground in the group, without that very diverse table with diverse perspectives, I'm not sure we would have been able to build such an extraordinary program as we ended up doing with what became the PEPFAR program.
Is that one of the riskiest projects the Case Foundation has undertaken, or is another one that comes to mind?
So we like to live with risk, and we say very carefully to organizations that we work with, we're much more risk tolerant than most organizations are. And I think that's just important to state, you know, whenever I have conversations trying to encourage others to get a little more comfortable with risk. We've made a commitment that we will be out front, that we will try things that are sort of on the edge, if you will. And it was a turning point for us when we said, not only are we going to try things that are risky, we commit ourselves to publish our efforts and our findings from them, and we make that commitment before we engage in the work. That really holds our feet to the fire.
It does. Trust Talk me, about transparency.
There are times when we wish we had not done that. But I think, you know, it's really been an important part of establishing the culture, and you might imagine, even in the way that we attract talent, et cetera.
Sure.
We need to make sure we have a culture and teams that are comfortable with risk-taking themselves. And, you know, risk-taking sounds scary, but I often say to foundations or to NGOs, if you really think about it as R&D, research and development, it's not as scary. And really, the work we're doing is trying to change the world. It's trying to bring benefit to society in major ways. Of course we should commit ourselves to research and development in that process, to always trying new things and asking, is there a better way forward?
And it kind of brings me to one of the principles you talked about, failing forward. Mm-hmm. That was kind of a new phrase for me. Could you share with our listeners, what does it mean to fail forward?
Sure. Well, we say fail fast and fail forward.
Okay, fast and forward.
So really what we're talking about there is just trying to stop if you feel you've had a failure, to stop, to really try to collect what have you learned from that failure and see if you can take those learnings into your next step forward. Okay. Mm-hmm. And really in life, we see this all the time, right? Someone might say, well, I was a disaster in my first marriage, but I really tried to learn the lessons and be a better spouse in my second marriage. That's a very simple way to explain failing forward a little bit. Now, in some cases, you know, it might be that the failure is such that you conclude, I'm really not going to go forward. I now conclude that, you know, the failure was so significant that I have to change direction. But in our experiences and study in terms of innovation, what we find is it is a long journey, and it takes, you know, I say the road to success is paved with potholes of failure along the way. You know, Albert Einstein said failure is success in progress. Failure is a really important tool in life, and I think our challenge is to learn from it and apply it, and that's really what failing forward is all about.
You and your team have just amassed such a wonderful set of resources that I want to make sure the listeners know your website, casefoundation.org/be fearless. So I urge folks to go and check that out. There's a fabulous video there. But what's also there, listeners will find a framework for action,
right,
which I think is really important. So it's aimed at informing and empowering change makers who are looking to create that transformative change that you talked about. What are the tips and suggestions do you have for funders as they begin this Be Fearless path?
So I would say two things. One is, if you're a funder and you come from a more traditional foundation, for instance, where maybe the assets that you're managing and deploying were not earned by you or someone that is still living today, I think those foundations have to be very careful not to go into protection mode. Mm. And I often say, you know, if I'm spending my own money, $100, I'm going to do with it whatever I want. I'll take risks that are comfortable for me. But Dory, if you give me your $100, I'm going to turn into a very cautious, conservative person. And while as fiduciaries of any organization, we have to always look at risk mitigation,
right,
we also really have to take a look at taking risks, because chances are the person that made the money, that built a success in the first place, did so by understanding that he or she had to take risks along the way. And so I think for funders, you have to be careful in your own organization that you haven't gotten into a way too cautious mode so that you're never trying new things or taking a little bit of risk. The second piece I would say is anyone can start being fearless, any size organization, any individual. For instance, if you're in a really conservative organization and you're sitting there scratching your head and you're saying, oh my gosh, how could we ever get from here to there? Well, maybe you could try one thing in this year's budget that would be risk-taking or R&D or experimentation.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you would take a percentage of your budget. Maybe there's a category or a small portfolio that you would say, we're going to deploy these assets this way to learn some new things. And you would have a kumbaya moment where you say it may work and it may not. And actually, I really have to add probably what we say is among the most important things in the Be Fearless work. Nonprofits are often using other people's money.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's their granting, et cetera. And they really don't want to disappoint their funders. And often they're afraid to ever acknowledge if something isn't working.
They'll even
keep doing things that aren't showing efficacy just because they're afraid they'll lose the funding if they go back to the funder and suggest something different. So perhaps the most important role of the funder is to give permission to the nonprofits to have open dialogue around what is working and what is not, and maybe be so bold as to say, we will make a commitment with you that will be with you through a period of time where we try together to make something work, which is very different than saying, I'm giving you this money now and you only get it unless you spend it this way, the same way, in a way that, you know, I want to see going forward.
What I like about what you just said, too, is a lot of our listeners practice a lean style of philanthropy. They might be smaller funders. They've chosen not to have staff. And so you've kind of given folks some strategies, you know, if they're not a large institutional funder, if it's just a couple around a kitchen table. Is there anything else you would think about?
Probably the last piece of advice I would give, and it goes a little bit to reach beyond your bubble, to that sort of collaboration, unlikely collaborations. I think too often in philanthropy, we don't think like entrepreneurs. We don't dream big and imagine the impossible. You know, Larry Page, who is one of the co-founders of Google, said he was inspired by learning to have a healthy disregard for the impossible. That's what he was taught when he was at Stanford. And I think no matter what size your organization is or what resources you have, the idea that you even whiteboard what might we want to do and then dream big around who your partners could be. At the Case Foundation, pretty much every initiative we take on, we must have a private sector partner, we must have a public sector partner, and of course an NGO or another funder at the table with us as well. And the potential to do great things is just so much more dramatic if you kind of come into it with that collaborative point of view.
I also think it's exciting, too, the way private foundations are looking at social entrepreneurs now as part of their partners, not just the NGOs.
Yeah, I think it is. And I think it's, you know, equally interesting, some of the solutions we're seeing. You know, at the end of the day, what entrepreneurs do is they solve problems. Most of them have lived a problem and they've built great companies to address that problem. Okay, the great innovations we've seen. Alexander Graham Bell wasn't really trying to create a telephone. He was trying to create a better way to communicate because his mother and his wife were deaf, and he had used different means to try to find a better way to have people communicate with one another. So when you peel back the onion, this has been going on for a really long time, but somewhere along the path, we stopped inviting in these great entrepreneurs who are so focused on problem solving.
One thing I'd like to go back to is this idea of sharing experiences, the good, in the quote failures, yes, so that other funders can learn. And you know, so much of philanthropy tends to be private. It's personal for people. And a lot of the folks that we work with have private foundations. How can we go about encouraging a candid conversation about our failures and sharing what we learned? How do we get over the private part?
Yeah, well, obviously that's been a big part of what we've been trying to drive through our Be Fearless campaign, including, by the way, hosting what we call Liquid Fail Fests. And the idea there is they're best when they're when they involve perhaps a wine hour or a beer. We find that people are much more comfortable talking about their failures in those kind of settings. But seriously, we've created hundreds of dialogues throughout the nation trying to encourage people to tell their stories of not just what has worked, but what hasn't worked. And, you know, I think and I think even for funders, asking your grantees those questions. Mm-hmm. For us, when we interview people at the Case Foundation, it's a tough question to have if you're coming in for an interview, but tell me about your greatest failure and how you handled it. These are things you can talk to the grantees about. These are things you can talk to your partners about. And I think it just has to be a very intentional dialogue. But I think making an intentional commitment like that for organizations, that they'll just be a little more transparent, it starts to really get in the DNA and the culture a little bit. But you have to start somewhere, and it starts really with the commitment that these are things we want to talk about. And it's never easy, I just want to say. It's never easy.
Before we close out, I would love to ask you the interview question. What's been your biggest failure, if you'd be willing to share? And what did you make of it?
Sure. Well, at the foundation, our biggest failure is quite clear. That was a clean water initiative that we had for some number of years, a very, very big bet, a very, very large reach beyond your bubble collaboration that included not only the U.S. government, but involved other NGOs on the ground, private sector partners, and individuals and friends who supported the initiative. We were a few years into it, and it was not working. It was not going well. And, you know, internally we might have been freaking just slightly, but we tried to act calm. We really did. And for about a year, we tried to put measures in place to get it sort of on the right track. And it was quite clear that was not going to happen. So we faced a pretty stressful decision. And that was, it was very high profile, launched at the Clinton Global Initiative with President Clinton to my left, First Lady Laura Bush to my right.
That's high profile.
So you can imagine I was kind of wringing my hands, realizing, okay, something has to give. Could we dust it under the rug? Could we pretend it just no one's going to ask us anymore and make it go away? But I knew that wasn't how we were going to handle it. So ultimately, I wrote a blog, and the title of it was The Painful Acknowledgement of Coming Up Short. And essentially, I just laid it out there as a failure. I think that was really the beginning and almost the genesis of our work in Be Fearless, because what happened was my phone started ringing off the hook. I started getting my email box filled with people who said, oh my gosh, thank you for sharing something that didn't work. No one ever talks about what didn't work, and I learned this from it, or I want to ask you that about it. So it really was the genesis, but we did fail forward ultimately. We found new partners on the ground in Africa, and that work has now extended globally as well. Couldn't be happier today about the impacts, but it really was for me a very, very difficult moment when I realized I had to be transparent in talking about that very large failure.
Jean, thank you for chatting with us. Thank you for challenging us to be fearless, to go out there and take risks, be bold, and fail forward. Thank you.
Thanks, Dori. It's been a delight to be with you.
To learn more about this segment of Forward Thinking and our work at Foundation Source, please visit our resources page at foundationsource.com. While you're there, tell us what you thought of this segment and who you'd like to hear on a future one. We'd love to hear from you. Our podcast is produced by Gabrielle Galanek. I'm your host, Dori Krieger.